Hey, I'm here, and it's another episode of me being here for you. And I have a guest today that I just love, Tom Papa. He's a comedian. You know him from hosting television. He's a writer. He's got a new podcast. He's got a brand new book that is so special, and he has a Netflix special by the same name. But he is just a real, real special, valuable comedian, and more importantly, human being. Does that matter as much as comedian? I don't think so. A couple brief announcements. We'll be getting out early today. Oh, no, we're not getting out anywhere. No one's getting out. Some people are, but we'll talk about that with Tom. If you look up in the thing, there's a phone number, or I don't know where it is, but it'll tell you that you can call a number and leave a message, and I'll be announcing it on Instagram stories or Twitter and tell you when I'll be calling, and I'll be calling you guys. So you just do that, and I'll be calling you and see how you're doing and have a combo, and hopefully it's funny. Otherwise, I'm just going to have a nice convo with you because people deserve to be convoed in a convoy. So what else can I tell you except here comes my friend, Tom Papa. Tom.
Bob.
Tom, we're not at Art's Deli having a sandwich.
Yeah, it's true.
We're doing this, and you've been doing it a lot. You're communicating a lot.
A lot. I sit here at my desk in my office.
Right.
And you know, I had my I have my radio shows, and then I've got the book tour that I've been on. And you have all of the anxiety of, oh, I have to go on this show. I have to do this appearance, but I haven't left this chair.
Right. I choose like different sets. I try a couple different places. And I have a 100-foot Ethernet cable and the highest possible. So when I go and do promotion somewhere, I'm communicating clean. But you have a good signal going.
Yeah, I've got Ethernet too going through. I hear that the real thing to do is go with the new AT&T fiber for your Wi-Fi.
I can't do it. I only have one service up here, and it's the one that's, I think Satan runs it.
I know exactly what you mean.
I want to show you how old I am. I asked my wife, and she doesn't do things like this. She just loves me, so she's kind, and she's a cook. And I asked her, can you possibly make me a cup of coffee? I'm running late, which I do for her as well. This is how old I am. The Late Show with Craig Kilborn. So that is old. That is old. That was after he got that after he left The Daily Show, and then thank God he did. Not bashing on Craig. I always liked Craig, but we got Jon Stewart out of that, which is was a miracle.
It's hilarious. I always remember doing like finally getting Letterman, and then realizing once he retired, it was like, oh, that doesn't mean anything anymore. That all that means now is that you're old.
Well, he was, you know, just like Johnny Carson, he was one in a million, and he's kind of our saint now. I mean, he's kind of.
He means everything. But as far as like a credit, it was like when I started, when someone would have a credit of like, you did The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, they thought it was a positive, but everyone in the club who was making out with their girlfriend was like, who is this old dude?
That's what some people, I don't think a lot, well, I don't know, the new gen. What is the new gen? I keep forgetting. What are they called?
Well, we're past the millennium.
Are we Gen Z?
Gen Z.
I think so. Gen Z. I knew a girl named Gen Z. She was cute.
Oh, she, I remember that girl.
Very young, very, very young. But her demos
were
good.
At the Improv, right?
Oh, yeah, at the bar. We don't have an Improv. We don't have a Comedy Store. We don't have a Laugh Factory. We don't have, I mean, some places are opening up now.
I know. I have a gig in maybe 2 or 3 weeks in Salt Lake City at Wise Guys.
Yeah, they opened up. I moved my date there to a little bit later because I want to bring my wife with me so we can get a couple more.
Yeah.
So this fits her schedule so we can Mormonize.
Yeah. Brad Williams went to do it the first weekend, which was last weekend, and he drove it 10 hours. And I won't be doing that. I will. I haven't been on a plane since March 7th.
Same.
So I'm. I think I don't care. I'll go.
Have you had a test? Have you had any?
I've had the antibody test.
Yeah, I had that too, and they told me I never had it.
Me too. We all were convinced we had it.
They made me take the SAT test over again.
Oh, they shouldn't have done that.
I know. And my joke that no one laughs at is antibody. What about Uncle Body? Nobody ever talks about Uncle Body. Oh, you're kind. You're just kind to me.
I love those kind of jokes.
I do too. They call them dad jokes, but you know what? They didn't think of it.
That's right. Only dad could do it.
Right. And dad can make some people laugh if he's not being a jerk or confining you to your room. So you've got, you have two kids, right?
Two.
And you still love them?
I do.
This time has been crazy, man. So have you all been cooped up together? Have been homeschooled on the computer?
Yeah. We've got two girls, 15 and 17. And my wife and I are enjoying their time a lot more than they're enjoying ours.
Right.
Well,
they're at that age. I mean, they want to get out.
Ooh, wow, my God. My one's going to be going to college next year. And she's just like, you know, it was all these things, all these timings of life they've been thought out before we got here.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's like they know that like a 17-year-old has got to lift off the launch pad and get out of the house exactly in June of their, you know, senior year. So she was ready to go. And then all of a sudden just back there with us. And the 15-year-old is in the, you know, the squirmy, I cannot be around you. Like I cannot. And so it's actually, and I'm trying to give them a little distance and be cool about it. And not, I go back and forth between trying to be respectful and tiptoe around in the morning, not to wake them up and do all that stuff, to just literally plopping down on the couch next to them when they're watching a show and be like, so what are we watching? And get out of here.
So you can't have any closeness with them at all. But around dinner time, do you have a dinner? Do you do a scheduled dinner?
Yeah, we do dinners. We do dinners for sure. And once in a while, we'll let it pass. They're so relieved too. Like the other night, I made them food and just put it on the counter and let them come and get it and go. You could just see like the relief that they didn't have to sit at the table.
So your daughters, they're cats, basically.
They get away
from me, and if you stand still for a year, they'll come toward you.
And just brush against you and keep going.
Yeah, give you that look, and then not at all.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember when mine were that age.
What's in your house?
My house is, it's nice, except I had a major plumbing thing happen. I got my two older ones are in New York, in Brooklyn and in downtown. Okay. And it's been difficult because people have been careless and weird, and it's not been healthy. And my youngest is out here, but she's not living with me. And everybody's, you know, accepted what this is like. And different people are going to go with quarantine in a different way now. I'm going to try to do it as long as I can, but I looked up your dates and saw how many you had. I'm like, oh my God, because I had a bunch scheduled. I had Denver at the Comedy Works, which I love, which I'm sure you love, in July. And I had to move that. So I just started moving stuff just because I don't know. You know, what if we're lucky Because every day I wake up, I see something from the doctors that says something else that says there's not going to be a giant wave, perhaps. And I don't know if they're being told to say that with electric shock collars.
Yeah. It really has been so maddening. The lack of information, the lack of, and I know that part of it is them not knowing, but there's also a large part of it of manipulation. Mm. And it really gets, you get that sense of what it must be like as a child to be raised by a parent who's like an alcoholic who doesn't care. And they just have fits and they'll blurt stuff out. You take it to heart and then they change their mind and you follow that path.
That's how I feel about what's going on right now. I mean, that's how I feel about our leaders, unfortunately. Not all of them, obviously.
Yeah, no, me too. And it's, you just want, just if they could just consolidate it to one message and just give us the truth, whether it's grim or not, and just keep going with it. Like, I keep thinking back to all of those Churchill moments, you know, like when he'd be on the radio giving the address all the time, like you've only seen through movies and read about.
Right.
Like, to just have that one message from that leadership figure steadily giving you the truth, but giving you hope at the same time. And that we don't have that has been so, that's been the most upsetting part of this whole thing.
One of the jobs of being the leader of a country, unless you're a dictatorship, is to tell everybody that we're going to get through this. Even if you're not good at many other things, one of the things that you need to learn to excel at is to be a good maitre d', and a good broadcaster, a kind person, even if they didn't write the stuff, be able to look into the lens, just like when we were, I mean, I was nine when I came home from school because they sent us home because John Kennedy was assassinated and Walter Cronkite's crying on the air. And I'll always thank him for that. We're turning to a couple of news people, but even the best ones, then you go to coming up. It's like Echo the Dragway. We're going to have funny cars. Even on the best, you know.
I know.
Or they'll say, I have a question for you, and it's really like the answer to the whole thing after this. And then it's 6 minutes of commercials.
Man, I was driving in my car, and I was listening, and CNN was on the Sirius XM radio.
Yep.
And we don't have it playing in a loop in the house because we've got kids, and you know, so we don't really have the news on.
Smart.
Driving in the car, you would have thought I was listening to a promo for a horror movie or an action movie. It's like every news story, bum, 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 this dramatic music pipes in, and you don't have to tell me how to feel. You don't have to create emotion. Just give me the information and I'll take care of the emotional part.
They produce it. And it's every single one of them.
Everyone.
It's Fox. It's MSNBC. It's CNBC. It's CBS. I mean,
it's show business.
It's show business and it's selling ad time. And this is what sells.
It's so gross. It's so gross and manipulative. And you can see why people are gravitating towards Cuomo and Governor Newsom. It's because you crave it. And when they speak in a dignified manner and just act like an adult, you just lean in, you know, like George Bush after 9/11, it was like, just say the right things. Just tell us what to do. Just we're with you. This is an opportunity. And I think that's the grossest part of this is in this tragedy, is pitting Americans against each other.
Yeah,
that, to me, and talking is the biggest violation. I love this country so much, and I love everybody from all both sides of the aisle.
You and I share this. I don't even think there should be an aisle. My whole thing is block the aisle. Just make it a big round. Put it in the round.
Yeah, perfect. And to actually pit people against each other during this time is the most disgusting thing I've ever seen in my life.
And then acts of violence, as we've been witnessing, and will not ever stop because mankind, I think, is flawed to the point of it'll never be right, it feels like, because there'll always be that percentage that are still basically Vikings, or just you know, I've been watching this. My wife and I have been watching things I would never watch, but I got involved in my little programs. Have you been doing that?
A little bit.
What do you guys watch?
We're going through all of Schitt's Creek right now.
That's great. We have to do that next. I need a laugh.
Chris Elliott, Eugene Levy, Dan Levy, Catherine O'Hara. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. She and Eugene. I mean, that's my comedy legend heroes.
Dream team. When Fred Willard died, we watched Waiting for Guffman. We wanted to show the kids Waiting for Guffman. And seeing the two of them in that again was just, oh, my God. They've just been so good for so long.
I know.
Oh, what a treat.
I don't know.
That's the only one, really, that we did some movie marathons.
Any great ones that you would say changed you?
No. I mean, it's compromised because it's all different ages. So, like, we did a Harry Potter marathon where we watched every Harry Potter. We did all of the Raiders of the Lost Ark. But you know what I just watched the other night when the kids were sick of us and we got to watch adult TV was The Conversation.
Oh, that's a great movie. Some people don't like it.
Oh, it's so great. Gene Hackman, and all the performances were so good.
Is that Coppola?
So, yeah, Coppola.
Right. Coppola. Gene Hackman, and, I'm just saying right now, French Connection. Gene Hackman and Roy Scheider, kids... Roy Scheider, the sheriff in Jaws. It's similar to what's happening right now in a way where some places are saying, no, go to the beach. It's fine. You know, it's the mayor of the beach town that says to Roy Scheider, get those people in the water. This is tourist time.
That's right.
But you can't see this disease. So, you know,
right.
We'll see what the resilience is. My whole thing is don't spit on old people. That's about it.
Yeah. I mean, which is going to be hard. Which is definitely
it's a hobby. It's one of my things.
I know. I do also get a kick out of the country in their sense of humor and their resiliency. Just the people. Yeah. I really do get a kick out of it. Like even like towards our last flights in March, people would get on the plane and they'd be joking and some guy would cough and his wife would say, he's just hungover. Don't worry about him. And everyone's laughing and they have their own, like bars are creating these things with they're almost like those little walking things you put toddlers in so you can walk 6 feet apart. I love that part of America that we're just, I understand that some of it's being irresponsible, but that they want to have fun and they want to have a good time and they just put an American spin on it. That part, I do get a kick out of.
It's the crime scene tape around the area that they can dance at the bar. Yeah. And it looks like it's 3 feet on either side. It's not 6 feet. It's not nine feet.
No, it's not.
And they're close enough, and the jello shots come in. You know, it right. And they're doing the two-step, or they're just dancing, and I don't know what they're listening to, but, you know, I just don't. I just send out what you send out, which is good wishes that people don't get sick. That's it.
100%. And a part of the confusion as you're searching for facts, and I'm looking like to go to Salt Lake City and so I'm reading up on all this stuff. And, you know, I keep seeing the numbers are, you know, where the numbers have like spiked in the recent weeks, it's been nursing homes, you know, it's been.
Yeah.
And I keep seeing like 94% of people who get it are going to be okay. And so you also don't know what you've got inside you. You don't know if you don't have a weird valve or something.
Well, I had asthma as a kid and I'm 64, even though I look at least 62, but, I'm ready. I mean, we've got the N95 masks if I needed to travel. God forbid if I had a real reason, you know, I got kids. If I need to get to them in New York, I'm on a plane. And then are you wearing that welder's helmet? Are you going to wear the whole thing?
Yeah, I've actually just went to Party City because they're doing curbside pickup now. And I got a whole series of just decorative masks. I'm just going as different characters each time I go out.
What kind of characters are you going to be?
Well, I was Jason from Friday the 13th. That wasn't that popular, but it gives you, it's, It creates a lot of distance in the supermarket, though.
That's the move.
Yeah.
Or the like guy with the pinhead movie from the horror movie with all the pins.
Yeah, that's where I got the idea. There was a guy like that. I was going for the avocados. That guy showed up. Everybody cleared out. I was like, oh, this guy knows what he's doing. This guy's going to shop faster than all of us. So, yeah, anything that's going to – I really want to – you're like I am. You're friendly. When you walk around, you're always kind of make a little joke.
We talk to people, and they go, people. I like you, and you made me laugh. And then I go, I got a damn good job. I made them happy.
That's right.
And so that's like, okay, I'm not a doctor. I wanted to be, but good thing I'm not.
Yeah.
And that that makes us all, and I'm sure you've noticed it, when you're on Instagram, all of a sudden when you go on to do Instagram Live, you go on there, right?
Yeah.
Everybody's on at the same time. All your friends are on.
I know.
Howie Mandel, Jeff Garland, everybody I know is on Instagram Live. I don't know what to do. Do I hop into DJ Who Kid? I hopped into Michael. I went into Michael Che's, and all of a sudden they put me on. And Michael was, I mean, he's such an angel, you know?
Yeah. No, it's great. And it's walking around, like when you walk around the neighborhood, just not having the mask and not being able to make a funny face to somebody and get them to smile, and just the one-on-one in your daily life, that's driving me really crazy. Like, I used to kill at the supermarket with the cashiers and the guy doing the shelves. I was like, that was close to going to the Comedy Store.
It is good to crush in a Ralph's.
It really is.
I didn't do as well at the Whole Foods. Everybody was so anemic they couldn't respond, you know?
Yeah, they were all in their own movies.
They were all gray. But just, you know, the thing that always drew me to you, the reason that we out of nowhere decided to go to Art's Deli for lunch is not, we've always crossed paths. But yeah. You've been doing stand-up how long?
Seven years in June 12th, 1993.
I've been doing it 340 years.
Whoa.
That's the show we've been watching, Outlander. So Kelly and I are watching this show. It's got time travel, love story. It's very sex is big. It's basically Lady Chatterley's Lover with through time.
Yeah.
You can always count on you're going to see it. You're going to see it. Doesn't matter who it is. They're going to be naked. They're going to be doing it. And it's like, nice. Okay, let's order in. So, but one of the things that attracts me that's so wonderful about you and your comedy and all of your stuff, I do want to mention some of it because it's so positive and wonderful. We're going to do the music like I do on CNN. I think I have it. Let me see if I have it. Oh, that's not it. Let me see if I have the right. No, that's not. No, that that turns me into a different. Turns me into a college girl. That's crickets. This is made for a comedian. This board has been. Oh, imagine what it's like to hear that again. Okay. Oh, all right. That's it. This is it. Our top story, Tom Papa. We'll be back right after this. All right, we're back. Boy, that was something.
That
sure
was
is fun to leave and then come back.
Yeah.
Oh, my. So you...
Good to be back.
You, when you started doing stand-up, were you always so positive? Were you always... Did you have this energy and this spark, or did you grow into it?
No, I always had it. I was always that way. But when I started, I actually thought I shouldn't be that way. And that I start in New York watching, you know, Dave Attell and those guys.
The land of cynicism and bitterness and not funny, definitely funny.
Brilliantly funny.
Yeah. I loved it.
Brilliantly funny. But that was, you know, Nick DiPaolo, all those guys. So
yeah.
I thought, well, if I'm just up there, you know, hamming it up, they're going to really hate me. So for a while I was trying to be, you know, edgy or trying to be not myself. And then eventually, and the audience knew, they weren't accepting of that. Like if I would come up and try and be dirty or curse and stuff, they were just like, they just met me, but they could just tell from, you could tell from someone's essence. You're like, that's not you. And I really consciously at a certain point stopped watching other people.
That's incredibly important. That's the problem with going to a place where there's a lineup. I don't, I love watching the great comedians, but I'd rather, and like Dave Chappelle, I mean, he's so great, but I still would rather, unless I'm messing around with him on stage or off stage somewhere, if that happens fortuitously, I'd watch the special and then I can, or see him live. That's see him. But in a comedy club, it's like the audience goes through in their minds who crushed and who didn't. And, oh, he just talked. And I was there hosting when Richard Pryor would go up and everybody stands up and then he just talks and goes through notes and then gets applause, but he doesn't go like, you know, he didn't try to kill. He's not there to kill. He's there to use it as a workshop, but it still becomes a competitive place because so many people want to get their career started too.
Sure. And like I could watch them after I've been on, but before I went on to watch them, you know, they're all so great and influential and they all have their own thing. And then a little bit of you starts, you know, thinking, so when I stopped watching everybody, and especially at the Comedy Cellar where you could actually sit upstairs, you didn't have to be in the room waiting. And then they would come and get you. Okay, he's wrapping up, and then wait even another minute or two and then go down. So I didn't know anything that went on in that room before.
All you knew is Jeff Ross had wing sauce all over his mouth.
That's right, exactly.
Their wings are good at the Comedy Cellar. We need to all come back just so we can get those wings.
100%. And that really changed everything. That was like, then I could just be myself. And that was really important. So then all of the positivity and just who I am just was allowed to, I allowed myself to just be myself on stage.
Last time I was at the Comedy Store, Joe Rogan, we didn't used to have, I used to be an MC there for 8 years. I was MCing the Comedy Store a lot.
Yeah.
Man, the main room I MC'd it a lot, which means I saw all the greats. Many are gone, which is insane. I always say non-funny people, it's okay if they go, but funny people, please spare them.
So when you sit, when you're in that hallway with all those photos, you know everybody.
I'm one of them.
Yeah.
that was the size of my head back then.
This is a great shot.
It's a 3 foot height. And then it got smaller, you know, when the job went off the air and then it came back when it, you know, my photos actually expand or contract with how my career is doing. But I was going to say, Joe Rogan was, he just destroyed, you know, he can't help but do that. That's him. He's so smart and he's a warrior up there. He truly is. And then he introduced me with the most gracious introduction. And it used to not be that way. It wasn't tag team stuff.
Right.
And I mean, it's, what's nice about it is you get to give a hug to the person before you. Hopefully from behind, but audiences don't get where I'm coming from. I mean, it as affection, and foreplay.
They don't know that.
No, they don't know. How do they know? But for some reason, I one of the advantages of that system is I picked up on his energy and went, you know what? I'm going to try to just really make them happy tonight in the way you do when you know, we all know how to kill.
Yeah.
You've been doing it so long. Okay, I'll do that at the end and I'll try the new stuff in the middle. I came up here to do the new stuff and not care at all whether I'd crush or whatever the word is used. But it was actually a fun night for me to do it that way.
Did it work? Were you able to use that energy?
I was. I was able to take that energy. And that's what the appeal was when I was 21 years old and auditioned there. And I keep saying, I've been doing this podcast for a short time. I'm a newbie. You've got Let's go to you for a second. You've got the Sirius radio show still going, correct?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
And it's called Papa.
It's called Papa, What a Joke.
What a joke with Papa and Fortune. And I've been on it, but I want to go on it again because I think I was drowsy. So I was going through whatever it was. Probably my house rerouted, and I didn't talk about it. I should have. But I love
you were actually. I felt like we caught you during one of the. You know, this whole pandemic has been mood swings, and we all have like these moments of okay, and then moments of uh-oh. And I feel like right when we called you, you were just coming out of an uh-oh moment.
I agree. And I remember it, and because I love you both, and she's so wonderful. She is, you know.
Yeah, she's great.
So unique. And
love her.
Will you have me on again so I can fix that? I need a duo.
Absolutely.
Because you
had a good appearance, but you were a little down about the pandemic.
Yeah, and I brought you guys down because you're caring, empathetic people. And that's What a Joke, and that's on Sirius XM Channel 93, and it's on weekdays 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time.
Yes.
And Netflix is a joke radio. Why did they choose that? The New York sarcasm. Netflix is a joke. Shouldn't it be, you know, comedy comes from Netflix, you know? Netflix is comedy. You know, I don't know.
Netflix is a joke.
Yeah.
It's all how you say it.
Well, it depends on how well you've done at Netflix. So your last special was how long ago?
It came out in February.
You came out personally or?
Oh, no, I came out years ago, but the special came out in February.
That's why we went to lunch. And was that Tom Papa live in New York City?
No, that was.
I got too much shit on you here, man. I don't know what to do.
Yeah, that was my earlier one, and that is on Netflix though. And then I have my new one is You're Doing Great.
That's the one I wanted to talk about, and that is a book as well. Is that correct?
The book is called You're Doing Great and Other Reasons to Stay Alive.
So you went with the same branding for this. Did you do the You're Doing Great tour?
That's kind of what I was touring. It was like an official tour. It kind of evolved as I was over the last couple of years trying to build up the next act. You're Doing Great became the theme of it because I would tell people from the stage, like, you have to, I just felt like people were stressing.
That's what, we're in the same place.
Yeah, and I was like, you have to recalibrate what a life is. I think social media has you thinking that this is all supposed to be fireworks and Eiffel Tower. A simple life is what you're actually doing great already. Forget running after stuff. If you're at a comedy club, you're listening to me, we're having this night, you're doing great. And I would just say that from the stage, and people were coming up to me after the shows and thanking me, like sincerely thanking me, like, thank you for saying that, because I feel like I should be, but I have this other feeling that I'm not, and I take care of my family. Thank you for saying it. So I just kept beating that drum. And at this time, I was doing the tour, and I was writing the book at the same time. That message, I just kept pushing that message in both places. And then when I wrote when the book came out, I put the tag on it of You're Doing Great and Other Reasons to Stay Alive, which I thought at the time was just humorous. But then when the book came out, it was like, it had a different meaning.
It truly has a different meaning. And we're in a place now because of finances and the world falling apart for people that suicide rates are up. And so it's a good time to invest. It's a good time to invest in it. That's a dark kind of humor. Investing in suicide is not something and I would edit that out, but I'm not going to because I mean no malice.
That's right. You have to consider the source.
And if anyone is out there feeling that way, they should call right now. Call the suicide hotline wherever you are.
Well, if you really cared, you'd give them your phone number.
My number is I-81-U-812. You can call 911, actually, or you can call 311 if you're not suicidal, but your phone's not working.
You're doing great.
Oh, that's 611.
You're doing great.
You're doing great is the theme. And you, I did this. I started this podcast 2 weeks before we had quarantine. And I was in studio starting it off, just doing a monologue. Then I called people to see how they're doing.
Nice.
And came up with the title, Bob Saget's Here for You. It's always good to say your name in a sentence. It makes you look like a good person.
Yeah.
Narcissism personified. But it was because of exactly what we've been going through the past 3 years, the separation. We're all out in front of the same audiences in all these cities.
Right.
It doesn't matter if you're in the North or the South or the Midwest. There's angry people. There are, and they're angry at the other people, and the other people get angry back, or they try to go passive to not, to turn the other cheek, and that doesn't work because the person doesn't stop, and then you got to throw somebody out if they're, I don't do it that often. I try to make the room work like you do.
Yeah, yeah. And I see, look, I think the human condition is always a little frightened, always worried, always stressed. And it doesn't take much to push that into anger. And if you give them somebody, if you take a human being and you give them an excuse, another group, then you can blame all of those feelings on something. Then it frees you of having to deal with yourself in a way. And even before this administration, there were forces out there starting to say, your brother in this state is the problem. When we were kids, it was Russia was the problem, right? It was.
I'm so old. I was hiding under desks during the Cold War. We were doing duck and cover.
Right. So we had this common thing and this common enemy. And like you said before, like we're very tribal and unfinished, and humans are always going to be that way. I get that, but you can see, like, through history, different leaders will exploit all those feelings and pick an enemy and then run it into the ground. And then it consolidates them and makes their team feel stronger. And the problem we've had in recent years is pitting us against each other. That the enemy should not be us.
That's it's truly a sin against mankind. I mean, we are our own worst enema.
It's true. Do you think if aliens came, we would all unite?
They kind of did. I mean, if Cloverfield showed up, you know, if spiders were around our buildings, and they were everywhere, not just New York. If they were everywhere, all over the world, like this pandemic, I think we'd still be listening to someone campaigning rather than saying, I'm going to send, I think if it was giant spiders, we'd be sending the National Guard and the Air Force. I do think we wouldn't be down to the point of it's the state's problem if you don't have a ventilator, you know? But I think what we weren't ready for that I thought we would need eventually is something for germ warfare. I thought somebody was going to drop something in water supplies or just spray us like,
you know, I did too.
And that means we should have, that's masks and ventilators and all the same crap. It's all the same junk.
I know. But
have a good, have a good flight.
Yeah, thanks. I don't know. I think that, that is the human condition. We're always, and I am too. And you have to work really hard to not be scared and stressed. Like there,
sometimes it's easier to be negative. It's easier to feel hopeless.
Sure.
And then I find what I know you find, because that's what I find appealing about your mind, is that I wake up in the morning more than not, and I'm pretty positive. I don't wake up going, unless I had a night of trauma or someone near to me is in trouble.
Sure.
Or something terrible's happening. I wake up pretty positive, like it's going to be okay. That's how I was raised. Were your parents like that? Were you raised that way?
Oh, yeah, completely. I think it's a combination. I think we're also lucky that we're genetically born that way, that you don't have chemicals that pull you towards major depression and stuff. You know, you definitely have that.
It runs in my family. And I was,
it does.
I was majorly depressed all of my 20s. And
really?
I was not medicated. I was, you know, self-medicated, but that's different. I was in my early 20s.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I found out that pot is not a mental health drug, perhaps.
No, not
for
in
some,
the long
for
term.
Some people, I guess. And then people get in trouble for calling it a gateway. But I actually lost a sister at 34 who was schizophrenic. And they do think there was a gateway that marijuana started her issues. That
yeah, no, I know people that marijuana, for people who have issues, it can loosen things and put them into a bad place. It's not a good combination for people that are dealing with mental health.
And yet for
sure.
Some it doesn't have that effect. That's why it's such a hard situation, because we're all different. We're not, you know, we're snowflakes.
Yeah, no, but I think, so anyway, I think that was part of it. Is I'm aware that, like, I was able to, like, in high school, wake up and say, like, no, I'm going to be in a good mood today and make it happen. But I think another huge, huge part of it was my family, my grandparents, who went through the Great Depression and World Wars and had every reason
again,
to be
I'm just going
to
tell you, it wasn't great. I talked to my dad. I don't know why they called it that. They got to rename it. It's ridiculous.
No, but it backs up what we're talking about. They could have called it the Lousy Depression, but these people refused to be down.
Right.
But they honestly had a
best depression
mantra.
Ever is what they're going to call the new one.
Right, exactly. That's what this one's going to be. But yeah, they said it's your responsibility to be in a good mood and make everybody around you stop your whining. Everyone has something to complain about. Put a smile on your face. Stop complaining about life and get on living and make the people around you happier. That was like over and over. That was not something that was said once. That was said over and over and over again.
Well, my parents went through a hard time. My dad was with a company. He was an executive in the meat business for a food company. Where were you born?
New Jersey.
What exit?
Passaic.
Oh, I know that well.
Northern Jersey, yeah.
What's your old address? I want to go there. I want to retrace you, like Raiders of the Lost Ark. Yeah, my dad, we struggled, and then they let go all their employees, so he had a Willie Loman thing kind of happen to him, you know, why me?
Oh, yeah.
But he didn't lose his drive, and he didn't lose his sense of humor, always had a smirk, always had an odd joke about it. And that's
great.
I think that's what's great about what we get to do.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm looking here. You have how new is this podcast?
My new podcast is just a couple weeks old.
Breaking bread. with Tom Papa. It's backwards.
Yeah, Breaking Bread.
But maybe not to some people.
It looks good to me.
Does it look good? So
yeah,
people don't have to watch this in a mirror?
I don't think so.
And who is a mirror?
But yeah. I've been baking bread for a long time, and I just see all the great conversations that come out of sitting down and feeding somebody and giving them wine and cheese and hanging out. We host all the time. And I just felt like this is what the podcast should be. Take the love of all that stuff, and we can sit, and you should come on and do it and talk about how you grew up and who fed you and where you came from. And it just opens up your whole being when you talk about what your grandmother made and what your mother gave you when you were sick at home. And
oh my God, that's what we all yearn for. Unless we had a rough, some people had a really rough childhood, and, you know.
But even the ones who had rough childhood, there's somebody along the way took care of them. You know, somebody, it could be a neighbor, it could have been, you know, a teacher. They all have a connection to these things, and it brings out the best moments in people's lives. So I figured that would be a cooler place to start the podcast from what I was doing before.
Would I need to be live? Would I be at your place? How are you doing it? Are you socially distancing, or are you Zooming it right now?
we're doing a combination. I've done a couple in person and then a couple this way.
Because some people don't care what the, I mean, you get Bert Kreischer. I don't think he'll just stand right next to you 4 inches away, I think.
It's true. Anyone that went through the Rogan studio has been tested, so we all feel like we can be around each other.
did they do the up the nose thing, or was it a blood test?
It was a blood test.
Yeah, I knew this because we all share the same publicist, who is the worst person I've ever met. I can't believe. Oh,
can't believe you're bringing him up.
Oh, Michael O'Brien. It's like Rumpelstiltskin. You just don't say that name. I honestly,
he is nothing but trouble.
He is my friend first and my publicist second, because he's that bad a publicist. I mean, do you notice his clients too? I love people. Like, I have a manager that I love, Tim Sarkis, and he doesn't tell me who his clients are. Like, I know most of them, but then I'll go like, boy, this guy, he says, yeah, I manage him. I'm like, well, because he doesn't want his other clients to feel bad if someone just got a 5-picture deal with somebody, even though there's not that many deals going on. There are. I mean, people are.
Yeah. They always want you to think you're the only one that they're doing business with.
Now, how often are you recording Breaking Bad? Breaking Bad?
Breaking Bad's all over.
Oh, my God. I can't wait to do that. Breaking Bread. How often?
I do it. It comes out every Tuesday. And the thing I do now, if I can't be with you, I still will deliver you bread to your home. So you'll get my homemade bread before the podcast.
And is it infused with coronavirus?
I can't test all of it, but there's a good chance.
So there's a good shot. Should you be tested before you eat your bread?
No, eat it and then wait 2 weeks and then get tested.
Eat it and then go to a nursing home. Oh, yeah. God in heaven. So,
yeah.
So you're really recording almost all day long, and then you go on other people's podcasts and shows at Sirius as well, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I've been doing a lot, especially because the book came out like 2 weeks ago. So that
I didn't realize it just came out.
Oh, yeah. I'm in the middle of the sales push for the book.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. Okay. So we have to sell this book. This is one of the more important things. I actually have a mic stand because I'm that. Oh, there you go. How many pages is it?
You can get the audiobook too. It's 280.
That's perfect. And how long is the audiobook?
6 hours.
Mine was 7 and I had less pages. Let me show a picture. Now here's something here's another book. This is your second book, right?
Yeah.
And this is you stole my rake. So
your dad stole my rake.
Your dad stole my rake.
Yeah.
See, I'm really good. My reading is completely
you should get the audio. You should definitely get the audio.
So now, what is the main theme of this book?
Of the first book?
Yeah.
The first book is all stories about family. So anyone in your family, it's broken down: mothers, fathers, cousins, aunts, uncles. Because a lot of my comedy comes from family. And, you know, when I would come off stage, people would come up, oh, I love the thing you said about wives, or what you said about grandmothers. And I figured, oh, this would be funny. This would be cool to go deeper into all of these people. So it's basically that I've been watching your family your entire life, and here are all the funny things that you may or may not have noticed about them.
And look, I mean, that is that's one of the jobs of a comedian. We often talk about our own family. And then through that, you get people to associate with theirs. My stand-up does, it's so funny because, well, actually, let me read this quote and stay on this real quick. This is from Jerry Seinfeld. Okay. And you've been friends with Jerry for 20 years?
Yeah, about 17. I equate it to my daughter.
I do everything with my kids as well. You know, yeah. Oh, Full House. My daughter was one.
Right.
I was a Disneyland freak, and none of us had shows. None of us were known. And I took George Wallace, Gary Shandling, Jerry Seinfeld, Lucy Webb, and Bruce Baum, and a couple other people to Disneyland. And it was the opening of Thunder Mountain Railroad.
Wow.
And I said to Jerry, I was sitting behind him. There was a, you know, you go up, you're ascending the track, and there's a goat with dynamite in his mouth.
Right.
And I, all I did was state the obvious, because you know Jerry. And I went,
yeah.
Oh my God, a goat with dynamite. And for some reason, it just, it was right on cue. It was right there. And it was just hilarious, because you can't be afraid of, it's not real. So what are we looking at? But he said this about Your Dad Stole My Rig. I want to read it because it's a nice thing. I would definitely recommend whatever the name of this book is. So he read a book that was untitled at the point you sent it to him?
Sure, that's how it happened.
Because I know it comes from a place of pure nonsense without any knowledge of anything. He is really one of my favorite people. So basically, he might not have read the book, but he had nothing but affection for you, which is a big statement, if we know Jerry. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. No, he's a good friend. Learned a lot from Jerry Seinfeld.
Yeah, too bad he can't get this stand-up thing down. I mean, he just he can't, you know.
You know, it's a hard thing. It's not for everybody.
He's and he never had a problem with, if I see, I was the guy like you, I wasn't myself. I was always weird, always, since I was 17. When I started, I would always say these weird stuff, but I wasn't cursing a lot. I did some, but I wasn't dropping F-bombs or anything. And then I did shows for 8-9 years of family worth, and I did a HBO special that I buried while I was doing both those shows, and it had a lot of stuff in it that was like my stand-up had become.
Right.
And it did well in the ratings because they expected ratings, whatever HBO had at the time, but people didn't know what to make of it because I was still me, but it had this, why does he have that edge? You know?
Yeah. It was surprising to people. I remember that.
And then it really, I guess 2007, I did an HBO special that really, I went a little too far. I used the word as a rim shot. So, but that's, you know, I admire people that don't, you know, Don Rickles would always say to me, I'll drop the word here. He would say to me that he would talk to Bob Newhart and Tim Conway. May he rest in peace. Don became like a dad to me. And he would make fun of me and say to them, you know what Saget's like? He's a Jewish Clark Kent. He comes out with a guitar and he goes, and the monkey fucked the dog and the dog fucked the monkey. And I'm like, Don, I don't do that. He goes, yes, you do. I said, I've never said that. He says, what's the difference? It's all a bunch of crap. And he doesn't curse, but then he would use the Lord's name in vain. And I don't do that because I don't want to, offend church going people. But Don Rickles could almost get away with anything in a time where we don't want to get away with anything. It's a different.
Right. Well, that's very similar to what you were doing. Cause that was the cool thing. It was like, everybody saw this guy who just seemed like so nice and wholesome. And then you see the act and you were like, I knew it. Yeah, come on. No one's that nice.
Right.
And it was still coming from you as that person, so you could say anything and people wouldn't be offended by it.
It some were, and after that one special, That Ain't Right, some people, I was at a benefit for Scleroderma Research Foundation, which I do benefits for, which I'll be begging you to do because it's a comedy benefit. And so you've got that coming after asking to do my podcast. I'll be begging you to do this benefit. So
I think I'm busy, but I'll definitely look into it.
I know you are, and no, I understand, but it's going to be virtual, and you could do it on your iPhone, the next one.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. And you could do 3 minutes. No.
No.
But the one guy grabbed me. I was about to go to the stage, and I lost my sister to this disease, scleroderma, and we were doing a benefit for it, and we raised over $53 million in 30 years.
Whoa.
So we're doing our part, and a guy grabs me, and he goes, "How could you do this?" I said, "Well, my sister died from it, and I'm trying to." No, I'm talking about your special. I saw it. How could you do that? I went, "Sir, I'm about to go on stage trying to raise some money to help people. It just happened. I was at NYU." Now, I answer him, you know.
You're right, it was
20-year-olds. I'm a chameleon. And I hadn't gone that harsh since, but I will talk about, you know, being in Winnipeg where you've been, I'm sure. And it's so cold that one of my nuts shrunk and fell off you know, or a hemorrhoid, something just crude but no different in a way than how John Oliver talks about animals. I do that as well. That's why he and I get along. So, I laugh at people that are just funny, and you just have, you know what? I have a very important thing to talk to you about. So we're going to be right back with Tom Papa right after this. Oh yeah. All right, we're back. And I don't know where that music comes from and what royalties have to be paid, but if it's on the soundboard that they give you with the podcast, it has to be legal. Yeah,
I would think. It's not your problem either way.
Do you have any... You're a young man. You've been doing this a long time. What aspirations do you have? Do you have anything you'd want to share? Are you so in the moment that you're content, or do you have something that you want to do? I mean, you've done so many specials. You're on your second book that I know is destined to be great because it's right on the money with where we're at. But what would you like to do? You've hosted television shows. You're consummate stand up. What do you see yourself wanting to do?
I would like to. You know, I've taken cracks at making a TV show, like a scripted thing. And I've played around with film scripts. And I'm not sure exactly what the story that I want to tell. But I would like to crack that at one point. To make a film, I think would be, I always kind of, you know, I've got these books and I've got the stand-up and the radios and, you know, as long as it's all still funneling the same message, then I'm cool with it. And I feel like if I could tell a similar story like this in film or television, but to actually make a movie, I think would be a cool thing to do. I just, you know, it's hard. I'm writing so much now, and
You get up in the morning and just start writing? Do you do the 3-4 hours in the morning?
Yeah, I tried to. With the radio show, it's kind of upset that schedule. But when I'm in the groove of it, I get up earlier than the house and come in here to the office.
It doesn't really matter. Your daughters don't want to be with you, so you have a full day.
It's not the daughters I'm avoiding.
Oh.
anybody that's going to talk, any kind of hustle, the cat.
Does she make you wear a corset? I mean, is there anything that I need to know? Do you have a dungeon? You're so nice. It would be so weird if you had a Homo Ratsad thing going.
Did he really need to be taken down like that? No, so I'm writing a lot, and I like writing the books, and I want to continue writing. That part has kind of surprised me in a way that this could be a cool thing I could do for many years. But I feel like doing something to make a movie would be a very cool another expression of that.
To write something that you're acting in, or would you want to direct? What would be the?
I don't know. I would my answer always would be that I would be in, but right now I'm kind of just thinking of the story more than as a vehicle for myself. And, you know, this all sounds kind of vague because I'm not sure exactly. I have a couple ideas, but I'm not sure what story I really want to tell that's worth putting all that effort into a film.
Well, if you want to make this a 2 or 3 hour podcast, we could really just break it all down. We could go through the whole, we'll go through the 2 or 3 act structure, depending on if it's a film or television, or a 6 act structure if it's an hour TV. I don't understand that. Where you have a half hour, you're 2 acts and a button, and then when you're right. a movie, you're 6 acts. No, I'm sorry. Your television, you're 6 acts, and then a movie, it's 3. That makes sense.
3 acts.
Right.
Yeah.
But 6 acts in an hour.
Yeah.
Would you want to be a cop on an episodic TV show?
Oh my God. No, that's one thing I don't want to do is be and I end up invisible in some TV show. You know what I mean?
Right.
I had an offer to go play a dad in like a Young Stars TV show that's shot in Toronto for the CW. I was like, you might as well just put me on a cruise ship and send me out for the rest of my life. Like, there's no, I would be invisible. I'm not playing Tom Papa. No one knows it's me. I'm just this dad. But you're sitting in a trailer for 6 months out of the year.
And you're like, and that, you're waiting to come to set because it's a kid-oriented show,
right? Yeah. So, no, I don't need to desperately be in something like that. But who knows if live performing doesn't come back, then maybe I'll take them up on the offer.
Well, have you thought of the Mike Birbiglia route and put your thing into a stage performance?
No, not really.
Because then it's the same every time you do it. You can change it a little bit, but it's still, and it grows. I mean, he did it so eloquently.
No, I don't think, I like keeping stand-up as it's, I like the pace, the intensity for myself in the stand-up thing.
I do too. It's like a hard drive that's always there. And that's why during this time, the podcasts, all of these are like the hard drive that can always be
right.
There. It's not, you're not going to stop doing it. You're just going to get busier, so you have to make time to do it. So
yeah, right, exactly. And it's funny, isn't it, how quickly these days go? It's like you would think we'd be like, oh, this is all drudgery and taking so. But I feel like I wake up, eat cereal, and I'm going back to bed.
No, I tomorrow I got to do a thing for this young person's film festival, underprivileged kids that are foster kids. And very young people. I mean, there was a 9-year-old made a film and a bunch of people made these films. So I was a judge and I also did on camera stuff, but I'm doing press for it. And for like hours tomorrow morning, and it wasn't my intention to do it, but it's hard to say no when it's a noble cause. So, and then my day takes off from there and this is good. I mean, to be blessed with being able to broadcast, being able to communicate. Talking to you right now, we might do it maybe on FaceTime at 5 o'clock. Hey, do you want to have a near beer or a mocktail? Yeah. What do you feel like doing? We could do it. How's your life? I don't know. I'm tired. I was on a thing today and I did this today. Oh, my plumbing's completely ruined. And
I know. It really is funny. There's like this. Don't you think that when we come out of this, people are going to change what they were doing? I bet there's going to be a bunch of comics that don't go on the road as much.
I agree.
Bet there's going to be some that go even harder, but it's going to shift.
I'm going to go hard because what happened to me was you just finished your special. It's now a book. You're there. I'm sure you're collecting stuff. You're writing. So new stuff's going to be a new hour plus that you're going to have. I was ready to shoot the special. But it's so changed now, but not because I was in the same subject matter that you were when here we are trying to do something that helps people, that helps me. It helps me to communicate with you or to communicate with people I call that are, they call a number and I call them. And
100%.
And that's my connection. But to have a whole room of people that I get to communicate with, there's nothing like that. But this is a different animal. There's huge value in this.
Oh, huge. But it's not stand-up. Will you shoot? Do you think you'll try and shoot as soon as you can?
I will probably do it. They said that to John Wilkes Booth, by the way. But I will probably do it next year, and I will hit the road when I can. I've been moving my July dates. I think I have a September, October, November, December tour back. And then I moved everything to 2021, so that's when I'll be doing it. And that's that the plan. Sense. But yeah. But it's the most I've been myself. It's the most I've reflected on my childhood and how I was raised in a time where there was segregation, racism to, and I was in Virginia. It's unbelievable what mankind you think has cured or stopped. And it's just, they haven't.
No.
And they have to. They have to. So it takes.
Oh, absolutely.
And you can't tell them with force or anger. So.
No. I think the biggest blessing is that everything's being recorded now. I think that's really going, in the long term, is going to help us. That all of this stuff that you could just hear, just be a news report, you could ignore. You can't ignore this anymore.
No, it puts a mirror right up to your face.
It's great. I think that's. I'm hopeful.
Do you record with your wife in the bedroom?
Record what?
Oh, nothing. your innocence just now. Who would you say is the bodier of the two? You know, the one that's more goes to more of a PG-19 place with comedy. You or your wife?
Me.
You're capable. I mean, I know you. You're capable of going very dark and very. I mean, you would have. It's not you. But you could easily do that kind of stuff. But there's no point in honing something as well as you have. I had no choice. I just became what I became.
Yeah, you do what's comfortable for you, right? And also what you enjoy.
I love making people laugh by leading them down a road and then saying something that is, well, now, since things changed before the pandemic, I would tee up something that was going to be, borderline bad taste or bad taste. And then your takes 2 minutes to tee it up. And then it takes four to get out of it. And, and there's enjoyment in that. Cause that's the only way you can do it now. Whereas before we were body punching with one-liners like Rodney Dangerfield. And a lot of his content was just pure R-rated, you know. A lot of people's. People don't realize, I don't think, how many people are completely what people would say is blue. But there's so much message behind what they have to say, you don't think of them as just a hard R.
Yeah, I know. I think the lines for all of that, I think it all comes down to, I mean, it's everywhere in the culture and, you know, there was a time when, you know, television was played by these rules, so everything else looked blue in comparison. But now it's just like everything's kind of just been allowed. There's been a freedom to say anything. I think the only thing that is offensive is if it's not truthful, if it's not you.
Agreed.
Like if you can tell if somebody's being phony about what they're delivering, that is like the one thing that makes you kind of recoil.
That and arrogance, people that learn how to do stand-up and they prance the stage because they've learned how to mark their territory like a lion because they watch the masters. But the masters walk the stage not as a trick or a technique. They do it because they really want to say this. You know, you watch George Carlin and a lot of it is hardcore premises without the joke. The joke is his anger over the situation right. of life.
Yeah, totally.
But then there's people yeah. that are just out trying to fill, and there are people that filled 20,000 seats, a few people.
You can, it works. It works.
Not for me either. But sometimes it does. It does when people sometimes criticize people that do things just for the sheer silliness of it. And sometimes it's so essential right now.
Oh yeah. No, I've never been snobbish about what you're delivering, but it's just that thing. If I sniff an insincerity and it's almost like when somebody is conning you,
it's a con.
I get that you're conning me, but just don't think that I'm stupid enough not to be aware what's going on. That part's offensive. what I mean?
I find myself applauding out of sheer show business graciousness, but I'm not. And I don't go see a live comedian often because we have the best people at our access if we want to see them. But, you know, if Bill Burr is going to do an hour in the main room, and they always post, at the Comedy Store, Bill's new hour, congrats on your new hour, all this shop talk. It's like, it gets to me after, paid regular. It's like, when I started the Comedy Store, we weren't paid, and then we were enough to pay our gas, and then the main room started to pay, but I said to them, why do you call me a paid regular? Can't you just say it's Bob, right. Paid regular? I mean, I never took the checks. I took them when I needed them, though. I took them when I was in my 20s and couldn't get a job.
Sure.
I had to pay their rent. So hold up your book again, because I don't want to keep you. I know you have 19 projects. You're doing great, Tom Papa. And what's the byline and other
reasons to stay alive?
That is the best byline. Who's your publisher? Yeah.
St. Martin's Press.
Oh, that's great. So they dropped the charges against them?
Yeah, they're all cleared.
Oh, that's fantastic. It's a beautiful cover too. It's really well done. You're doing great. To say that to people, it's like certain comedians have become empowerment people, have become the people that would give you the Tony Robbins positive message, except it's not a dog and pony show. Not saying he is, but there's many people that give you inspiration, but yours comes from just a place of just pure empathy and love and humor.
And just being kick-ass funny. That was the thing. It's like, can you be sincere, but be kick-ass funny first?
Yeah, that's the thing. You better be kick-ass funny. That's one of the dilemmas with doing this show. I'm sometimes not as funny as I would normally be because I'm so involved in it. And it's an empathetic podcast become a conversation. So it's not like, unless you're all hyper some guys require and ladies require when you come in, you got to be just going just 90 miles an hour. Other people, it's a strong conversation. And that's
but you do a good job of always, even if it's serious, you always, if you're anywhere near a funny line, it's coming out.
That's really sweet. I really want to thank you for doing this.
Thank you. It was great. I appreciate it.
It was great to keep you away from your family. I know you enjoyed that.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you.
Send your daughters my best, not in a lascivious way, but they are Full House fans, whether they want to be or not, because they grew up. Unless they're smart. Unless they're, like, book smart. But if they're kicking their father away, what are they watching on the TV? They kick you away from. Are they watching?
Yeah,
America's Got Talent.
There's a lot of TikTok going on.
That's what I got in my house.
Yeah, and then a little World of Dance, but that just started up again, so they're really excited about that.
Oh, that's great. We live literally on these things. I don't know.
Yeah,
I have 100%. No idea where we would be. There's great things about it.
Yeah.
And then, but once they make government rulings that all of these things have to be policed,
Yeah.
Then we will truly be a communist nation. So that'll be
good. Yeah. Right, exactly.
Oh my
God.
But
thank God we had him during this. It's definitely something to amuse the hell out of ourselves.
That's true. Between that and my broken plumbing, I was set. Well, I hope to see you soon. You really are the best. You're such a good guy and so funny. And people have to read your book and they have to watch your special by the same name. And you're just you're a real special guy, man.
I can't wait to sit down in a restaurant with you again.
Oh my God, yeah. But this time, let's wear clothes.
We'll talk about it.
Okay, I'm gonna wear a halter and a thong. Well, give my best to your family. Give my love. And
all right.
Okay, I'll talk to you. Soon. I'll call you every day this time.
All right, great. Okay. See ya.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks, man.
Bye-bye. Well, that was Tom Papa, and here's that music I was playing. Yeah, no reason for that. None. And they play it on the news. Not that. That sounds like, I don't know what that sounds like. Someone from another generation. Whoever composed that, I want the royalty that you're not getting. You got to do a couple things for me, which is subscribe to the podcast. Or, you know, and rate it and review it with positive comments only, you know, 5 stars, that kind of thing. And you know, review it. I love the chicken. It was really good. You know, they did the best job on my irrigation system, that kind of thing. It could be non-related to the podcast. I look forward to talking to you next time. Sending you lots of good thoughts and I'll see you. I'm here for you. All right. Ciao, everybody.